Welcome, everybody, to the Awari no Hoshi no Love Song Book Club podcast. We're here with episode 5 total of the Love Song Book Club podcast. We're here to discuss songs 4 through 8 of the Awari no Hoshi no Love Song album. So that's Flower Garden, Miteki no Soldier, Kooru Yume, Executioner no Koi, and Throw Kaizoku no Kimagure. How's that? Did I flub that too badly?
I don't even know what you said for the last one.
Toaru kaizoku no kimagure.
That. Joining me this week, we have the lovely Biscuito.
Greetings!
The lovely Kyuketsuki Miyu.
Hey!
And the lovely Pepe.
Ahoy hoy.
And Aspie.
Why are we all lovely?
Because I couldn't think of anything else. Okay, so let's start jumping in right in with Flower Garden. This is a depressing song, guys. It's
still one of my favorites.
Awari no love song.
This is good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like
musically.
Yeah, like musically, it's kind of very different from the past few songs. Kimi no Airplane, like, not included. The others have all felt pretty like poppy, upbeat. This one is definitely much more slow and melodic.
You know, this is
the thunder.
The lightning, oh so frightening.
The love song book club rises again.
Okay, so like, you know that this song is like actually good when even Cannon, who really hates songs that are strictly piano, says that it's actually pretty decent.
Of course.
The song does some pretty cool stuff musically where like it obviously it's all piano, but there's a significant amount of how it's meeting with Yanagi's voice and then also like doing some harmonizing all throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And the playing is actually really nice and emotional too, because as the song progresses, it gets a lot heavier. There's a lot more force in the notes and everything, so it progresses really nicely. It's good stuff. It's making a piano, which can be really bland if someone isn't playing it right, into something that's really nice, because the way that the pianist is actually playing it really accentuates the sound, and it fits really nicely with the song.
Yeah, yeah. So. Absolutely.
It's a very, very simple melody, I think, and I think that's part of its charm. It's a simple, repetitive melody, but it's something that really sticks to you.
It's not even really that repetitive when you listen. It actually flows pretty nicely, kind of throughout the song. And then it's cool that how it kind of comes in and out, and it'll meet with her voice, and like it'll kind of play with the lyrics, and then sometimes it'll just kind of go off on its own little tangent, and then sometimes Yanagi will go off and do something different, and then the piano will come back and fill.
Yeah,
in,
I was about to say that
where she would normally be singing.
Yeah.
So it's got a nice kind of a choreography going. It's a nice little dance between the singer and the piano.
Yeah.
It's really.
I couldn't have said it better.
That's the best way to describe it. Yeah.
What do you think of it, Mi?
I loved this song. This is possibly my very favorite, but one of my favorites from the whole album. So.
Oh really? Mm-hmm. That high? Nice.
Not
why
surprised,
do you love
even.
It so much?
Well, I'm already actually a sucker for piano songs, so when it's done really well like this, it's really easy for me to fall in love with it. And the music is just absolutely... I loved it so much. And lyrically, I still think it's really good. The part where... just the line in particular where the world won't return back to how it was, the way that it's separated is... emotional in terms of the whole album for me too, because you've already gone through so much murder and stuff, and you kind of realize along with the person who's singing it that it's just probably kind of stuck this way, and there's not a lot of hope in that, and I don't know, it was a really nice emotional punch to the gut, if a nice emotional punch to the gut exists.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Mi. Like, I guess with all the other songs, it's kind of been like, this cutthroat, we gotta kill to survive. It's like, Russian, everything's really frantic. And this is just like, while all this is going on, there are people in the world who freaking can't get out of bed and, like, are horribly sickly, and they can't keep up with the tempo of this world, and they're going to get left behind. And that's, I think that's really what it's trying to say here. It's just, like, there's...
It's not just action, swords, and thieves, and castles. It's the simpler things.
There's this big world going on, and it sucks for some more than others. Some can fight to survive, and some don't even have the opportunity to fight. And so, yeah. So,
to that end, in regards to things being kind of dark and crazy, and this song being a bit lighter, what do we have to say about the actual context here, though? Because I feel like tonally it's still pretty interesting, to say the least.
It's also very key.
Well, I'm just happy that I'm not the only one who thought it was about prostitution.
Yeah, a lot of people say that.
Hmm. I don't know if that's exactly what Maeda intended. Yeah, I think a lot of people on the forum agree as well that the lyric that says that she took off her clothes as she was about to do her work kind of heavily implies that the song is about the girl who is, well, into prostitution. And that's...
I like this idea because it kind of fits into kind of an... I like to think a bit more deeply about the song, about what exactly it's trying to say in regards to sex. and we'll get to that a bit later, whenever we're done kind of talking about what it is on paper.
So on paper, it's about the girl who is, I guess, a prostitute. And despite that, she's also innocent. She wants to learn about the world. And her partner, or whatever you want to call him, tries to help her get out of the world, but because she's so sickly, the moment she gets out, she's dead.
What do we think about this relationship between these two characters? Because I saw there's kind of like two ends of the spectrum here, where some people think it's like possibly kind of a cute thing, and then some people think it's kind of like some nasty shit going on, where like the person who is, air quotes, protecting this girl is actually kind of a sicko. The idea of, oh, this is my precious precious girl that I must keep to only myself, and it's kind of a selfish take on it, I guess. And I had looked at your post in regards to this, you know, the private prostitute as being the person who is owned by that person, and I guess you're saying that it's someone who is owned by another person, like there's a third party, I guess?
Yeah,
what you're implying?
In my post, I thought it was like she was a private escort, if you will. But I didn't think that the person singing is the one actually, you know, paying for her. I thought it was someone else. But I guess I can see that connection being made.
There is a question, because I feel like, obviously, the character we're supposed to be empathizing with is the girl. And I don't really feel much of anything towards the guy character here.
Yeah, for sure.
And I say that just because, like I said, there's kind of a weird selfishness to his character in the way that the lyrics are written out. Maybe I was the only person who felt that way, I'm not really sure.
No, I actually agree, but in where I think you're seeing the selfishness, I actually feel like the song's a lot more about the singer than it is about the girl, because he kind of feels like whoever it is has a bit of probably a distorted image towards her.
I mean, I agree. I think you're right. I was more so talking about, like, where is there for the connection between the listener and the author. Like, I feel like where the empathy is you're trying, like, that character is your conduit for emotion, whereas you can be more inquisitive about the protagonist, I guess, or from the eyes of the person, who obviously we're reading from.
Yeah, I get what you mean. On this point, I think I'd agree with Biz in that you can empathize more with the girl because, she's the one who's all innocent and stuff. Supposedly innocent.
It's basically this idea of, like, he's trying to protect this person who obviously wants to go out and do things on their own, as she does, and then when she goes out and does what she wants to do, it ends up being bad for her. And then, like, he's, you know, praying by her side and all this stuff, and he's like, God, if you exist, do something, and this, that, and the other thing, which is kind of a pretentious statement. I don't know, it's... it's definitely interesting to look at it that way. I don't know. That's the way I see it.
I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
What do you think actually happens? Does she actually literally die from the pollution outside? Or does it mean something deeper?
I'm going to assume that there's some, like, weird, like... Like, I feel like she's younger and, like, maybe is kind of born with weaker immune systems to whatever the hell is going on in the world. And, like, I feel like there's some sort of, like, crazy acid rain, nasty shit outside. And, like, while he's, you know, strong enough to be able to go out there, probably covered in whatever to wander about, that she was not able to do so when she went out there unprotected and then got pretty fucked up. Taking all of this information together, in regards to what our message is here. So we have this kind of prostitution vibe, and some interesting terminology where, the girl, it's raining, and she wants to go outside to wash away all the dust and dirt, which can be taken in a variety of ways. You can take it in a sexual way, or you could take it in a, it's probably some grimy, nasty old bunker, and she wants to get out and wash it all away. You know, you can look at it both ways, but I kind of look at it the former way.
All right.
In regards to where, like, maybe she's not too proud of all that stuff, and she wants to go out and kind of cleanse herself of this work that she does, and in doing so, it ends up not working out so nice for her. But in the end, he makes her, like, this, you know, fake flower bed, and it describes in regards to her saying, you know, that she's resting in her flower garden, which is something that she had wanted to see, right? She wanted to see the real flowers and stuff. And I kind of looked at that as, like, kind of another one of those things that you can kind of look at two ways, where one way is, you know, he's talking about she's sitting in the fake flower garden that he made for her, or B, in her mind and in her coma, she's in a happy place, right? So, kind of the idea of, like, a dream state or release of death and being at peace, finally, is kind of something that was rolling through my mind. But, like, I kind of get this, I don't really know how far I can go with this, but I was getting kind of this interesting vibe about the topic of, like virginity or something, yeah. Because, like, you have the terms of flowers and, like, this kind of dirtiness and, like, that you can't wash away and the world is already this way and there's no changing it, and, like, she's trying to change that fact, but she can't, and, like, that's kind of the end vibe that I was getting from all of this. What do you guys think?
You saying virginity being analogous to the end of the world?
Sure.
I definitely think there's something deeper to this song. I just have a really hard time figuring out what. Like, I don't think that she literally falls ill the moment she gets out because of all the pollution in the world. I think there's something more to it. I think we're going somewhere. We're getting somewhere with the whole the flowers meaning virginity thing, right?
I think, but the flowers might just mean femininity, almost, as opposed to virginity directly, and it's about almost like the corruption of femininity as it goes through, and in the end, the world only has this artificial, like, pure femininity, and that's the artificial flower garden that he makes for her at the end, because it can't offer the real pure form of it anymore.
I mean, when you say that, I it kind of cycles around in my mind then to kind of reapply that, because it is kind of a...
It's very related to the idea of virginity and everything.
Like a forced norm or ideology that, like, the preciousness of virginity is, like, so sacred.
Honestly, just the fact, like, that they use the word shoujo in the beginning, like, that is... That paired with the word flower very much made it kind of like focus on virginity and femininity in general, because the purity of the idea of the shoujo as opposed to...
So do you think that maybe it's taken a stab at that idea and saying that that's like a stupid custom, or...
I don't think it's...
Or is it trying to protect it?
I think it's probably trying to protect it. That's how I've been taking it. The point of view, like, the singer of the song is clearly pretty dismissive of the work, that she does, it's really hard to get a feel for how what she really thinks of it. I know you said that you because she wants to wash off the dirt, and I do think that's actually a really good thought on that. But I feel like the song almost has a there's not a whole lot that can be done about it feel to it, because especially because mm-hmm. of the hopelessness of the singer. Just kind of like, there are no flowers in this world. There is no, like, feminine innocence in this world.
Wow, my mind is just going in so many different ways now. I feel like I could just, like, rant about this kind of thing forever. That's interesting. Because, like, now I'm thinking about this idea of, like kind of a male pretentiousness, where, like, oh, there are no more flowers in the world, you know, like, almost, like, kind of a nasty thought of, like, oh, there are no more, there's no more virgins out there or something. Like, I'm having some really crazy ideas now.
I don't know, maybe she wants to go out to find these quote-unquote flowers, in other words, these quote-unquote chest girls to... maybe to be friends with, maybe to
I don't
find something to believe in. I don't know.
I think she's looking for the flowers more for herself. It's, you yeah. know, about her own. I mean, yeah.
It could be literally what the story is, but I'm
suddenly,
know, trying to look I mean, at it from an author perspective.
It's like
of
a
like, what is it?
Garden, and it's
it,
like...
it could be what this means. It could be what this is in the story, but what does it mean? You know, what something is visually may not necessarily be what it
yeah.
is.
We could still take this song literally and it'll still be a good song, but I
yeah,
feel
which makes it good writing.
Deeper.
That's what makes it good writing, mm-hmm. you know? Like
there's something there, deeper and I can't figure
multiple,
out what it is.
There's multiple layers to something that is obviously good writing. It's something that you can look at face value and it still be something that's good and enjoyable, and then also something that you can look at even deeper and try to find a deeper meaning, and I think that's great.
Imagine mm-hmm. how much this song would have been ruined by the animation. If you had an animation... Mm. You would only have one interpretation. Mm. It would be ruined. This is definitely one of the more interpretive songs of the album, and I'm really thankful it didn't get an animation, because we just have a typical Maida story, and not something a bit more interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it does kind of do credit to it as being something that is strictly a song with an illustration, as opposed to something that would have to try to portray the story a bit more visually that might take away from thinking about it a bit more deeply.
Well, speaking of... animations and visual storytelling. Time to talk about Miteki no Soldier.
So is this the best song on the album?
Yes, this is the best song on the album, I think.
Quite
I think a lot of people feel that
it's high.
So yep.
I mean, just like listening to Ori no Hoshi no Love song casually, this is always the one that
this,
I come
this
back
song
to.
This song does jam.
There's something about this song that I think makes
it
so appealing.
It's
I personally think it's the whole cha-chan, cha-chan.
How do you describe it? There's a lot of good vibes in this
where
song.
Is,
it kind of goes
Pai
all over the place.
When you need him?
Oh, yeah.
I'm a particular fan of, in any of, like, the regular verses, when the piano's just doing its little... Like, so good. Good stuff. Yeah, I could talk forever about the different aspects of the song, but I'm not going to be able to do it justice, frankly. I know Maibatame, if I'm saying that right, wrong, I don't know.
I mean,
currently in the audience,
yeah.
Friend, made a good point to note out that this song is fast. And shout outs to Yanaginagi for being able to keep up with this. Like, I'm pretty sure that. In the booth somewhere, she was about to pass out and hated Maida for a little while, because this song is like, the staccato is just ridiculous. Like, it's just, like, it just keeps going, and she keeps up with it, and to the point of where when you're listening to her sing it, like, it's almost like she's, you know, tripping over it, but she's still able to, you know, get it out. Like, this, listening to this live would be a treat.
I think every singer who has sung for Maida can universally agree that Maida songs are hard to sing.
Yeah, I know Bonecast is mentioning something about it. I don't know if it was that an interview in particular with Yanaginaga. I know I've definitely seen Leah in multiple scenarios talking about a song that was way too much.
You know, whenever you see like those KSL live concerts and you see all the singers, like all the girls like meeting up after, for like drinks and stuff. Do you reckon they just like shit talk Maida together?
God damn it. That fucking verse in that song. How dare he do
because
that?
Because that's the first thing I would bring up.
I'm pretty sure that's what they do, yeah.
Oh man. Oh,
Maida's a madman.
That's just hilarious to think about.
Anyways. So this song gets me hype because of just what it's about is the best shit. It's just, it's about honor and glory and take me to Valhalla. Like, I don't know, this is good shit right here. Yeah, I love this song.
Is it?
honor?
It seems to be the glory? Opposite of that to me.
Well, anyway, what do we kill for?
Ain't no honor for this
she's
girl.
She's just a little shithead. Just like, I like to refer to
she's
her.
She's just a cold-blooded killer.
The gist of the story is that there's this little kid who's, I'll just refer to her as a little shithead, who is just kind of, she's nasty, she's a killer, and she runs into this guy who's very honorable, basically, and, like, saves her whenever she's in a bad thing and kind of takes her under his wing, and, you know, he's the righteous one and everything, and she decides, you know, alright, I'm gonna play along and ride with this dude for a little while and not let him know that I'm actually kind of nasty. And then as time passes, she kind of feels, you know, maybe I don't need to do that. Maybe I can, you know, turn the other cheek and I can learn something from this guy. Like, she kind of looked at it from a kind of a heinous perspective of, oh, I'm going to learn to, you know, be as strong as this guy. And she kind of you feel like she's kind of starting to get into this idea of, oh, maybe I can be as cool as this guy. And then, like, that doesn't last very long. She immediately does something stupid and he sees her do it. And then, you know, he's just like, all right, well, fight me then. And then, you know, they get ready to fight. And then whenever shit goes down, she kills him and finds out he wasn't even going to try in the first place. And he teaches her a lesson. And that's about that.
I really like how it starts at the end. It's just...
Yeah. One of those, the classic where it starts where you see the hero and he's already dead, you know.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of.
But then you find out how it happened.
Her mindset at the moment after she kills him, like, what exactly happened? And she starts remembering everything that happened.
Interesting way to look at
yeah,
it.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Like a flashback almost, yeah.
It's almost like it's helping it's helping kind of set in that impact of what she. The weight of what she just did. And I think the core message here is value of life, like, first and foremost.
Yeah. I mean, like, you gotta, like, compare this to Killer Song, where the girl there, she was kind of, like, painted in a sort of redeemable light because she killed to save those orphans.
With armor and everything.
But then...
She was a knight by the end of the song, yeah, too.
But in this one, it's like, it's a similar sort of message of, I'm just killing to survive, but this girl's enjoying it. And she really doesn't have any sort of, like, moral high ground here. It's a very different sort of portrayal.
The other song, she felt very pushed into a corner. This one, you know, in the animation, you see her, she does it because she likes the sword, kill that finally triggers the final fight.
That's the honor and glory aspect I want to throw in, where he's kind of, you know, going out on a sword kind of thing, like, that kind of thing just gets me. I don't know, something about that is super cool, where, you know, he's just like, that is, I don't know, it's just the pinnacle of honor. It's an honorable dude.
I think it's interesting to think of this song from a perspective of, like, what does it really mean to kill a person?
Mm-hmm.
What happens after that first kill? Does your value of human life change? Or does it strengthen? I don't know. I assume none of us here have killed someone, right? Right? Like this? Okay. Anyway, so we can only rely on stories like these to kind of get a feel for that sort of world. She kills the star owner, like, without even second thinking, right? And that's just because killing has become so ingrained to her body, into her mind.
It's like there was never a moment in her life where she learned, like, the value of life from the get-go. Like, it was immediately something that she was completely selfish about, and she only cared about herself. And, like, there was never anyone in her life that helped create that human, there was no human connection to it. Mm. And now she finally, like, is able to reach that emotion.
Yeah.
In a world that will let her do it, because obviously everyone is, you know, cheering them on and all this, and she's like, oh shit, where everyone else is, you know, just as vile as she had been.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy enough to think of the girl as, oh, she's a little shit because she killed the storekeeper she was stealing from. But it's, I guess I kind of want to see it from a different light. Like, maybe she doesn't even realize what she's doing is bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to think that she obviously learned. I mean, I think that this
character
can have a good future from learning from this situation, even if it may be something horrible. There's good to come out of it, because clearly she learned. So, there's that. This is a song that, in being so cool and so, I guess, popularized, that has definitely benefited from its PV by a significant margin. I want to throw that out there. Like, I think that this song's PV is quite paramount to its success.
Yeah.
Cannon made a fantastic post on this track in regards to tidbits in the PVs, because the PVs are, in fact, full. Like, every illustration is, like, painstakingly filled with interesting little details and artistic choices that are absolutely worth looking at.
Yes.
Cannon, in particular, made a lot of points about, like, faces and eyes and kind of which I guess directly relates to, like, each of these characters' kind of souls and things like that. This is totally something that, you know, like, anyone else could just look at and then write off as just being, like, kind of animation choices. But it's important to look at it as to why it's working this way.
Yeah,
it's a good question to ask, and it's important that in the PV they decided to actually use those.
And how the girl sees them.
Do you want to go into those details, Aspie?
I mean, like, I guess Cannon was talking about how the, I can't remember the post quite well, but it's more along the lines of the girl doesn't really see other people. Like, she's kind of, like, stuck in her own head, and, like, killing people doesn't mean anything to her because, like, why do other people matter to me? And that's kind of represented there with the eyes, except then the man appears and, like, saves her, and that's when he gets eyes, and it's, like,
He actually gets a face.
Oh, someone else, like, exists in my life now.
Faces.
Yeah.
There's, like, just kind of all these background characters that mean nothing, and I think, we were talking about, the little girl character and how, there's no human element to her killing, in that she doesn't see the person in any of the creatures, the beings that she's killing. There's no connection.
Yes.
There.
Yes.
And
that's
so
what I mean.
You learn at the end there, that, like, that's when everything changes, and then she becomes the one that doesn't have the face. You know what I mean? She's just become another one of them. She realizes what she actually is.
Yeah, you could talk a lot about what that means. Like, it's, maybe it's she's rejecting herself, like, can't accept herself.
I think that does signify her growth.
I've become a monster.
Mm-hmm. Like, her growth into realizing that what she's doing is actually what everyone else she hates in the world is doing. And that, hey, maybe I should change. And hopefully she does change.
I think everyone agrees in the interpretation that the man, like, let himself die to her hand to show her a message. He basically saw what this girl had become. He's like, Jesus Christ, like, you're basically beyond hope. There's, like, only one thing I can do.
And that was a very risky move. Like, how would he know that she would feel guilty about that? I don't know.
I don't know if he was necessarily trying to teach her a lesson as much as doing what he thought was right and hoping she learned from it. Because he wanted to both punish her / teach her a lesson for having killed the shopkeeper, but my impression is that they've been together a long time at this point, and he's come to care for her. And he does want her to learn, but he's not willing to kill her himself either.
And there's, like, obvious grief in his expression whenever he asks her to fight. Like, he's not like, yeah, bring it on. He's just like, all right, this is what it's come to. He's definitely disappointed.
It could also be a pride thing, I don't know.
But it's more about teaching her the value of life. By like, now you're going to get to like feel what it's like to kill someone.
Feel what it's like to lose someone, more like.
Yeah. Teach her the value of life by freaking sacrificing himself. It's fucking sad.
It could also be a pride thing, because he's supposedly the invincible soldier, quote unquote. And maybe he thought that if he uses his dominant hand, he might hurt her too much.
Maybe. That's an interpretation.
Oh, he's just a cocky son of a bitch? Is that what you're trying to say? I don't agree with that either, but it's funny to think about. I'll fight this kid. I'm not even going to use my dominant hand. Oh shit, she got me.
And I just really like how... I love how the music goes in this, how, like... Forgive my lack of musical terminology, but, like... You got the really upbeat, like, first half. And it's like... And then you get to... the bridge, I think you call it. Where, they're on their journey and she's kind of had a change of heart. And the music is feeling a lot more positive and hopeful. And then just drastically cuts back to the, like, chorus. And it's like, oh, she's returned to her old ways.
Your bridge is, you have, you know, your standard verses and then your chorus. And the bridge is going to be the thing that's different. That's kind of like going to bridge a gap between something by being something else.
Yeah. And so the bridge is really hopeful. And then it's like, it almost abruptly cuts back to the chorus. And it's just like, oh... So she's back to her old ways again. I thought that was a really cool way of telling a story through the composition. I don't have a lot else to say about this song. It's cool.
Alright, let's get into that controversy, boys. Here we go. Let's talk about this song. This song that's not a song. The phone thingy. And what is this shit? What is this garbage? What's this garbage doing on this album, guys? The first song sucks.
Yeah, me too.
The first reply by Helios Alpha.
This is one of my most listened to at this point from the whole album.
Really?
People who are not necessarily fans of this track are not going to have many friends on this pod because I think we all like it. So...
Well, we need to get someone in here who hates it. AKA
this
Cannon.
One gives me big Little Busters vibes.
Something Little Busters vibes. Yeah, alright. Basically, we have something very different here. Where we've got some noise with some narration. You could fairly not call this a song. That's fair.
Consider it at least a poem.
In technicality, you cannot call it a song, so whatever. Even though I'm pretty sure the lexicon has accepted that a piece of music on an album is just called a song. People call things that are purely composition songs, but whatever. You can not call it a song if you don't want to call it a song. But basically, this composition is still really cool, and I want to talk about what it actually does. If there's anything that I wanted to have, like, an instrumental, it would totally be this, because I could totally, like, put this on in the background and just let it rock, because it's good. It's really peaceful and interesting, and it has some interesting little kind of spicy bits to it, that are cool to look at in regards to what the hell is actually happening in this story. Very, very lyrically driven. Miu, you put it perfectly. You can definitely look at this as more of a, much more poetic, in a literal sense. Like, it's kind of like a spoken word poem. Like, this is the kind of thing that somebody goes out to that poetry night at the coffee shop and spits out some hot stories.
Actually, that does seem what it is, like someone reciting poetry to bongos in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Hipster.
So, it's I guess translates to the Frozen Dream or whatever. Interesting name.
Yeah.
Very interesting name. A name that I think fits pretty well with what y'all think is going on here. So I'll go ahead and throw that out there, because obviously my idea is different, but I think you guys are probably more on point than I am. But I'm still going to stick to what I my interpretation of what is going on. But so the gist of this story is it's your monologuing, your commentary here is a girl's diary. And it's going day to day throughout, like, I guess it's like, what, 2 months? Like, I don't remember. It's like a month and some change, if I remember correctly. And she's going to the school, and she meets a boy, and she's like, oh, this boy's super cute, I want him to like me, what can I do to make myself more interesting? Oh, I know, I'll come up with this stupid thing where I don't have very good memory, and that'll make me seem appealing because he'll want to help me, and she thinks it works, and then she starts to actually lose her memory, and shit goes really wrong, and...
Or does she?
Yeah. And then there's a great twist at the end that kind of explains everything, in a sense.
Explains everything and nothing.
Sure. It just raises more questions, clearly.
And then there's apparently a bug in the program.
So yeah, we have a story where obviously you have girl tells a lie, lie becomes the truth, is the gist of it. We don't really know, we're going to go ahead and just apply that, you know, this is in our post-apocalyptic world, so that's obviously important in regards to the setting of the rest of the album. And the main question that comes to my mind, like, almost instantaneously, are what are the powers at play? Because there's obviously something that is supernatural, or maybe scientific, that is at play here, of why are things being weird, what's going on? And that is, like, the major question of what the hell is going on here. So, what do you all think?
Now, Pepe has a scientific interpretation, and I have a fantastical interpretation. Basically, I think a great way to incorporate supernatural elements in a sort of modern world, technology-based world, is to use the word bug. It's just, it's not a problem that can be fixed, it is a bug, and we don't know why it happened,
Bug is fair.
Bug or glitch, yeah, same thing.
Well, she does call it bug.
Bug. It's a very neat way of introducing a fantastical or supernatural element into a technology-based world, because you see this a lot in horror. The phone's not working, why? I don't know. Spooky magic.
I really, really, really like, you know? Kind of fantastical ideas that are embedded in the idea of science. So, like, you have stuff that's, like, really inexplicable, but then it's explained by some sort of advanced science, that might kind of make a little bit of sense. I always thought that stuff's cool.
That's another way of putting it. But I don't know, I have more of a fantastical interpretation, and it's like, you're not this isn't Chaos Head, I don't think. I think this might be some sort of like, it's almost like some sort of like higher power, or I don't know, it's kind of like hard to
find interpretation,
because it's so
abstract, right?
But
yeah, there is.
Basically, somehow this girl's will was transplanted into the program that shouldn't be possible, but it happened, and it's like, almost like karma, some sort of like divine retribution for her doing the wrong thing. I don't want to say it's like, I don't want to make any assumptions, but that's how it feels to me.
What about you, Pepe?
I have a very clear-cut interpretation of this.
Virtual reality.
Be very open
this
to
is,
others,
this is,
but let's go.
I mean, I do think it's a virtual reality.
To me, I don't think it's a virtual reality, although that is the first impression that the song gives. After thinking about it for a while, I actually think it's a VA. A visual, not a virtual novel.
It's
a visual
VN.
Novel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes, I think it's a VN. Basically, what happened was I got this idea because there's... Well, it's obviously something that's in the computer because there's a bug, right? But I thought about how it could be a game. So rather than the girl at the end, like, the one with glasses being someone who programmed the game. What if she was the one playing the game? And I tried to think, like, oh, what kind of game happens where you can control a character in a daily life setting and you try to impress a boy? Oh, right.
Okay.
Yeah. Like those otome games where you have so many choices. And I tried to relate this, like, especially stupid choice of trying to forget your memory. I tried to relate this as being a choice of the player, because that's not something that the character would do at first glance, except you still have that option. And I can recount many times when a player in a VN is given a choice, and the players themselves don't feel like that this choice is appropriate for the character, except that you need to choose it to keep going with the story. Yeah, to see what happens.
Let's talk about Undertale.
It's kind of like the idea of like a VN where like, I'm going to try to pick the options that I would pick and not necessarily the options that the character would pick and this, that, and the other thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. Even in Klana, there were a few times when, why is Tomoya doing this, even though you're the one who pressed the button that makes him do that? Anyway. I've always been very particular about that sort of thing when it comes to visual novels. I think this was a visual novel, and I think her, like, the other girl that she sees is the girl in the other.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the other save.
Wow,
file.
Holy shit. Exactly. Talk about VN so, ideas. Like, that would be an amazing VN. Like, you have multiple routes and saves that, like, start to mix together. That would be incredible.
So yeah, I think that, like, by you choosing that, you don't realize that you're actually screwing up the character's life, you filthy bastard. All for the sake of storytelling.
So, like, she's going down, like, the shitty route, and then the other character's calling her over that's actually also her, and it's just being like, how's that working out for you, bitch? You're getting that bad ending, whereas
exactly,
I'm getting the good ending.
Exactly, exactly. All because you chose that stupid choice of yours. And the girl with the glasses is watching this happen.
Very,
and she sees
very interesting interpretation.
As she sees the text disappearing, so these dates I don't see as a diary. I see it as like the VN dialogue where there's always a date in the VN. You know how it is. So yeah, she can see the text disappearing.
It's just going away because there's nothing to be there. Like, it's just fading away.
Yep.
Okay.
And at the end, the player realizes, oh, there's a bug in this shitty game I bought. Oh, well.
Peculiar. So the woman with the headphones is her because she's wearing her headphones at her computer? No, it's a headset.
No. The woman with headphones is the girl playing the otome game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, exactly.
Miyu, do you have any particular words for this this wonderful story?
So my take on the story has always been pretty different from these in that my question is always, why, if this is a VR world, in all of the hell that's all of the other songs have portrayed, why have people wasted their time on a school life simulator? I always am trying to figure out, like, why would this world need to go back to this school world? And I'm wondering if, like, they're almost having this girl, like, relive her memories from before, but she's unable to essentially successfully do it, and like the bug is essentially like her memories being corrupted.
This is a prequel. This is just a prequel to that Porter Robinson song.
It might just be that. Yeah.
All right. My interpretation's fucking weird compared to everyone else's, sure. I guess. I think she's a robot.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that the character is a robot, and I feel like we're in a world where I don't know where this is being set, but let's look at a couple interesting little bits of information here. Where it all starts at whenever there's this love at first sight, okay? And that's just such a peculiar subject. And
but Biz, robots can't love.
You get love at first sight, and she even goes out of her way to say in her little diary here that there's nothing particularly interesting about this guy. Like, he's probably not even that attractive, but for some reason, I like this guy. You know what I'm saying? And I just thought that was weird. And so as things go on and she starts to like not have memory and something's going on and she's just not able to keep up with what's going on, she eventually gets replaced with another her. Kind of like she was a shitty model, so they had to order a new one. It's kind of the idea I'm going with here. Basically, like, I'm trying to look at it from, like, a love perspective and, like, kind of this weird future love where you go into this world where, like, dudes are able to order, like, their robot wives, right? And I'm like, picturing this kind of, like, this ugly kid who just, like, orders, like, this ugly, nasty kid in school who orders his girlfriend. And she's a robot who's, like, partially sentient, but, like, there's, like, this problem going on where she's not able to, like, she's not able to retain any of her memory. Like, she's got some sort of hard drive malfunction going on here, and she's not able to keep anything. And so it keeps getting worse, and the guy keeps trying to, like, get it to work, and it's just not working out. And so he orders another one, and she gets sent back.
Okay.
It's a very different interpretation.
Yeah.
So her replacement, the replacement that she sees is actually, oh, it's another robot.
And, like,
you can easily be replaced.
Yeah, and like, that's because I was trying to think of, like, it in a more tangible sense and not kind of a digital space. So I was trying to, like, how would this fit in, like, a more real-world scenario as opposed to, like, inside of a closed space? So
okay.
I think that y'all's interpretations are fairly valid, and the VR one probably makes more sense in regards to, like, an ended world. So, like, a closed world inside of a digital space would be a lot more logical than a reformed world where they're able to, you know, make robot wives. But I don't know, like, that's just kind of the direction that my mind started going in, and, like, when I was listening to the actual music of it all, like, there's obviously, like, a very digital vibe kind of going on with the track. There's kind of this beep, boop, boop, like, in the background of the entire track, and, like, I like the kind of digital deconstruction and, like, delayering of the actual music that's just kind of, like, taking each layer of the music as it goes along and just like, I'm gonna pull this away now I'm gonna pull that away, and I'm gonna pull this away, and it's almost like it ends up going all the way down to, like, just a very simple kind of binary, straightforward, like, boop, 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 to where it's almost nothing, and then it kind of comes back again, right? And it gave me this kind of sense of anxiety and mania and lunacy that I feel like a robot would very much be able to find if it was kind of in a sentient state where it's asking questions about itself. And then, you know, it's just icing on the cake with the whole wake up and some woman's looking down at you, and it's just like, oh, there's some sort of bug in the system here. Like, it's almost like she got returned and they're looking at the robot and, like, trying to figure out what's going on with it.
I don't think there's any, like, problems with what you're saying. I think it definitely adds up, but I don't necessarily agree with it. It's interesting, though. I do appreciate that we have so many different perspectives on this song.
Yeah. Because it's so fucking weird, that's all I can say.
Yeah.
Right then, so now that that's done, let's talk about Executioner no Koi.
Sure.
Damn piss. Sorry.
Mean.
Yeah, that is the highlight of the song.
So this song's kind of cool, and I guess this is another song that there's actually some interpretations for as well, which is kind of neat. Where, yeah, you have the story of this executioner, and he's, I guess, being told to kill some woman who he just swears up and down, this is my love from long ago, and decides, fuck it, I'm a freer, and we're gonna run away. So he spills her whole story to him, and he listens, but he ends up falling asleep, and when he wakes up, his money's gone, and this, that, and the other thing, and I guess they just get recaptured. So the second time, he gets bolted down, right? He's not allowed to run up and run away, so they give him a gun, and they're telling him to shoot her now. And he shoots the rope again, and tells her to run, and that's basically the gist of it, and then he gets left there to die, right? And
so,
like,
what you're saying is it was a virtual reality.
No, what I think is interesting here is the idea that she takes his money, because she gets captured again, and they obviously, like, get away together and they're able to talk. I don't necessarily think that she's, like, bamboozling him at all. Like, I think that they actually got away and that things were going fine, but then they got tired and fell asleep and they just got recaptured again. I don't think that she actually took his stuff and ran away. I just think that they got captured. Like, and that they're the vile people of the world are what, you know, took all their stuff and then locked them back up again, and it wasn't necessarily her that was trying to get away with just herself. I don't think that. That's kind of how I view it.
I guess the only point I wanted to make is what I did also talk about in the forum. Him feeling pity for her has absolutely no bearing on why he saves her. Like, I think the song clearly states that he's only saving her because she looks like his first love. And that's just him clinging on to... Yeah, love is blind. That's him clinging on to hope that he could meet his first love again, who has, I guess, passed away or he can't meet again. But yeah.
I guess the that was, like, literally the only question I could really raise from the song is, what were the motives of the woman? Like, yeah. You could say that she was bound up because she was a thief, and, like, that makes sense. Like, you could definitely infer that. But on the same... To the same end, I don't like... Okay, first of all, they're doing executions, which is already some sage, like, some shady shit. And second of all, like, none of the people in the crowd who are sitting here watching this execution seem like nice people. They're, like, all cheering it on and shit. Like, I was like, okay, the crowd is clearly nasty. So, like, I immediately empathize with the person who's bound up and the executioner who wants to set her free. Like, I empathize with them instantaneously because the people who are sitting there, you know, wanting to sit there and watch the bloodshed, I don't like them. Like, there's no reason for me to empathize with the situation. So that's what leads me to think that there is goodness within the hearts of at least her and definitely deep down the executioner who's like maybe able to break away from where they're living now. And even if it may be something that's very just a small little smidgen of something in their mind it makes them make literally a life or death situation for themselves in the society that they're in. Is important.
Someone put attention to the fact that the executioner was ordered to kill the girl twice. Doesn't that seem a bit fishy?
Especially they could after have he chosen kind someone of else.
Saved her the first time. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah, it's weird.
That, I don't like, know.
There's so many things that are strange about time. Their relationship. That, like, that's why I bring that up. Because it is the key question in the entirety of the song, really. Of what exactly is going on there. It's like they really want him to kill her for some reason, you know?
Yeah. This is the part where we offer an answer.
I got nothing. I don't know. Like I said, there's just very clearly something not good about that society. And I think that they're trying to break away from those norms. So yeah. in regards to like
my internet cut out, so I didn't hear your question. Sorry.
In regards to what there is like morally, I think the idea that love is blind is good. That sometimes you don't really need much of a reason other than maybe something really small deep down in your mind to want to do something, to spring to action, even if it's not going to be beneficial to you, to go ahead and go for it. Because, I mean, he's sacrificing himself for her to be set free, so.
Maybe they're trying to get him to kill this girl because they view them both as some sort of detestable people and want to, like, punish them almost. Like, let's say for an example that maybe this is a race thing. Maybe this girl and the executioner are both members of, like, a minority race that these people don't like.
I mean, they do say that they refer to her as it, I guess.
Yeah, and so the girl has done something wrong, and the guy is more like he's kind of been born into this society as this, let's assume, race, because I'm going to go with this angle now. And he's kind of, like, submitted to it, like, and the society, the powers that be, have basically said, like, okay, we'll let you live as long as you, like, be our executioner and kill all of your kind, you know? You know, kind of like, you need to dirty your hands for us because that's your punishment.
And so when he comes back, it's not a matter of... It's like they might have fully intended to kill him as well, but it's like, now you got to kill her, finish the job, and then we'll kill you. A sign of kind of like a double punishment. That's kind of what I'm thinking now.
I think that the executioner was probably in a privileged position, but seeing her and saving her the first time kind of wakes him up, and then he probably, when she steals all of his stuff and disappears, tries to go back and make amends, but I agree that I do think they were essentially trying to punish him for having not killed her in the first place by killing her and then planning on killing him.
I guess you can take the race out of it, that's still there. I was just trying to form some greater narrative, I guess.
Another interesting thing in the illustration is that she had a knife in the illustration. I don't know where she got it from, but...
Yeah, I don't really understand that. The illustration is weird. Like, is the guy being hung or something?
It's like him being bound afterwards, I guess.
Yeah, that's his escaping, execution.
I'm just like, where'd she get the knife from? I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I got more questions by the end.
Shrug.
I think the moral ideas make more sense, whereas the story may not necessarily be the most sound thing in the world.
The moral is that if you find a hot girl, you gotta save it.
Follow your heart. Just follow your heart, man. Just follow your heart. That's all I can say. Also, the guys going towards the end is really good.
Yeah, that's the highlight of the song.
And the music is obviously, we didn't really talk anything about it, but the music's some good shit in the song. The song's definitely a banger. And it also goes really fast, so again, more Yanaginagi being extremely impressive for this track, because she gets into, like, I can't do that shit. So, good stuff.
Yeah, I guess to end this move along. Podcast.
With some robot pirates!
Cyborg Pirates, yeah.
Yep.
With Toaru Kaizoku o no Kimagure.
Yay!
Toaru Kaizoku o no Kimagure. Well, I guess this might be the thing we'll have least to talk about unless Biz has something unique to say.
I don't have a lot to say. This story is kind of funny to me.
Alright.
I don't know what it is about this story, but like the end of the story is so just like, what? Like, it's really out of nowhere.
Nice boat.
Okay, let's escape. It's a cyborg pirate.
And she clearly had no idea what pirates were. I don't know what she thought they were doing the whole time, but...
pirates are a merry band of people.
Like, if you were to, like, totally present to me, like, a short, like, that just, like, kind of had the unexpected ending, that is exactly what this song is to me. Like, it just, like, turns into something complete. I'm like, what? Like, what is this decision? It's really funny.
Yeah, it confused me. What, like, they just leave together?
It's like, okay, so I guess you got this chick who ends up with some pirates and is like, I'm gonna hang out with these pirates or these sailors or whatever because I'm stranded or some shit. And they're like, arr, we're gonna take you on our ship and stuff. And then they all...
She was like, fuck the land.
And, like, they all like her and stuff, and she's, like, really digging hanging out with these pirates, but then, like, as she hangs out with them for a while, she finds out, oh, shit, they're fucking pirates. These guys are pretty dangerous. Yeah, they kill people and stuff. Whoa! Yeah,
okay, let's break this down a bit. We know this is set in the ruined world, right?
Okay.
And the ruined world is a place where everyone is just killing each other and shit, and she's just like, man, fuck this. She just goes out in the ocean, I don't know why, and she just finds some... Yeah, she just finds some merry pirates. It's like, oh, you seem like nice people. You're not land people. It's like, oh, wait, you are.
And I mean, they save her, so fair enough. Like, they're clearly kind-hearted people, in a sense. Because, like, arr, what are you doing out there? You need to get on our boat and keep you safe and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, cool. God.
Maybe she's never heard of a pirate before. I could believe that.
But so yeah, they go out and do some pillaging, and she's like, oh god, they're all covered in blood, this is fucked up, I gotta end this. She's like, oh, I'm gonna end them all, I'm gonna drive this into a rock. And then they're all like, arr, don't be doing that, mate. And they stop her from doing it. And then
just like out of nowhere, dude's just like, surprise, I'm a cyborg and I'm a broken man and I too want to escape this life of piracy, and then they go off on a boat together and that's the end.
Did the rest of the pirates die?
I don't know. It's just like...
That's weird.
It's super weird.
It's pretty weird.
Yeah, they probably died.
Song's a lot of fun to listen to, though. I actually really like this song.
I like this song, too. I agree. This is good stuff. I gave this a 5 because the song jammed.
Yeah, I think I gave it a 4 because I do still think it's weird, but I love the song. I really do enjoy it a lot. Though,
it's just,
the ending is...
It cracks me up so much. It's so funny to me. It's just like, you have this, you know, deep situation, but then it just, like, it complete tone shift, and the pirate's just like, I'm a broken man. Let's go away together. Because it's just like, and then he takes his clothes off. It's just like, okay. Yep. And then they lived happily ever after. Like, what the fuck?
I'm just a weakling too.
Yeah, it's an actually happy ending. Wow.
So yeah, funny. It kind of is. I don't know, like, this girl is obviously very distraught and depressed at the state of the world, and she's just like, I think she's almost like, you know, I'm gonna go to the ocean, and like, if I don't find anything there, I may as well just drown. And maybe that's what this was. Maybe this was like a suicidal instinct. It's like, if you're all this shit, we're all gonna die. And then the pirate's like, wait, I'm actually a good guy.
The thing that really bugs me about the ending is, like, specifically when the girl shows up at the ship, she's like, hey, let me work here after she meets them. And there's very much this determination of, like, you know, this land that took everything from me and I've seen my family killed. I'm going to keep living, but I won't do it here. But then at the determination when she finds out that the pirates are actually pirates the whole time, like, it feels like her trying to kill them is just not in line with where she was at the start of the song to me. But maybe I had too lofty dreams for her. Loftier than she had for herself.
Yeah.
She just doesn't know anything about the world, basically.
It's just One Piece.
At least the Pirate King was a nice guy. Maybe. Who knows what he did to her after.
Yeah.
He was just another weakling.
And that's about all I can think to say about this song.
I know what the moral is, but I can't help but find the story really funny to me. And there's nothing I can do about that. People are probably going to be mad that, you should look at this deeper and more carefully. I'm sorry, it's funny. It just is.
How do people feel about Orina Hoshino song as a whole? Like, just the world and the album?
I think it's a lot of fun.
It's, yeah, that's the best way to describe it.
It doesn't get me going. It does not get me going like Love Song, but it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
While Love Song is more analytical, this might be more emotional, maybe?
It's a kaleidoscope of different perspectives on a world that has ended.
I think it's a really fun way to tell a story. I would be really happy to see more.
I really like that it does have a lot of different tones to it. Like, I like that you have the kind of the really dark stuff, and then the wacky pirate stories, and then, you know, the execution story, and then you have the glory story, and then stuff. I don't know. Like, I like that it goes in a lot of different ways.
And Flower Girl.
Yeah, like, you can have an album like this that has, you know, super crazy, you know, time travel nonsense going on, and then also something like Flower Garden on the same album, and it feel right.
It's super eclectic, but it does it really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, such is the charm of Owari no Hoshino Love Song.
Now, special mention, former Maibatame has prepared some fan art for Miteki no Soldier, which I'm going to check on the video now if you're watching on YouTube. It is really cool. I'm ecstatic that we're still getting fan art for Love Song. And we've got one more episode left, so I'm hoping we get one more. But yeah, thank you, Maibatame. That's an awesome drawing, and I love it.
Shit, ask me remember. Who do I pay $10 to?
Miu, any like closing thoughts? Since like this might be your only podcast.
I've really enjoyed this album so far. It I think by the end of it, I'm thinking that I like just regular love song better. Like,
it's amazing how many people are coming around to that. Like this, it's made me really sad. Like, I want to talk about that just for a second. There are people in the forum who are like, they see us doing a Wari no Hoshi love song. It's like, oh, I love a Wari no Hoshi. I don't like love song though. I didn't listen to those podcasts. And I'm like, what? Listen to those podcasts, guys, because you will get a different perspective.
Proud of those, too. Those are so much fun. I really enjoyed those.
Yeah.
If anyone is listening to this and didn't listen to the first three, you need to fix that right now because it will change your mind. Mm-hmm. I swear to God. First three. I mean, like, I assume people already read the other Owari podcast, but.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The people who are just tuning in for Owari, don't do that, please.
Love song has its charms.
And I will be the first person to admit that I don't think I can do Owari justice. Like.
Yeah, but, like, we're doing our best. I feel like it leaves a lot less to interpretation than Love Song does. And I'm still, like, scratching my head over Koryume. I mean, like, that feels like an entire route from, like, Little Busters or something. It's great. It's just so much to think about. But, yeah, we just scratched the surface on that. I guess I'll stop rambling and bring this to a close. Thank you for joining me once again, everybody. Shout-outs to our live audience, Sponecast, Helios Alpha, and Maya Batame. And thank you to anybody tuning in. We look forward to seeing you again for our final podcast of the Owari no Hoshi no Love Song Book Club podcast. See you next week, guys. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.